Welcome to the Bodice Rippers Romance Novel Podcast, a podcast where we take a deep dive into the world of romance novels, looking not only at the nitty-gritty and sometimes steamy parts of romance novels, but we like to also look at the many different aspects that bring this genre together. We like to look at the authors and looking at their strengths and weaknesses, looking at the process of the authors, and also looking at the historical aspects of romance novels. We're a bunch of nerds, but it's going to be a lot of fun, so get ready.
Hey everyone, we are back with another episode of Bodice Rippers. So fun aside, Nina, our podcast producer, was like, so my sister-in-law was over at my house when I was producing the podcast episode from last week. And she came in and was like, Nina, why do you have body strippers on your computer? And she was like, what are you talking about? And she's like, it's Bodice Rippers, first of all. So Nina is all in for having us create another podcast that's called Body Strippers, and that will be our rated R version. This is more PG-13.
Yes. Oh my gosh. She sent me the same message, and I was like plotting in my head how many like different paraphernalia I could make her t-shirt wise, cup wise, that said Body Strippers, and send to her, because I thought that was most excellent. I was like, okay, so you're gonna get in trouble with the husband at some point
for this podcast. Although I feel like as our media agency, we do a lot of work for a lot of different clients. This is like nothing compared to the boudoir studio that we were working with. Oh. My children were opening up my iPad to do, you know, whatever they do on there. And they're like, what the hell is this? Why are there women in underwear or topless on your camera?
Mom, is there something you'd like to tell us?
Yeah. I was like, just don't look at it, whatever, it's fine. So this is the least of our problems, I feel like.
I feel like this is so mild. This is so G-rated for us. It's not an issue at all.
Yeah. This ain't nothing. So welcome back. We had our first episode last week. We're so excited to be back for this one because we're talking about something that we not only love to read, but we loved to watch.
As did the rest of the entire world.
Okay, truth or dare, how many times have you watched the series Bridgerton?
Truth, I've watched it 3 times, but to be clear, because I feel like you've watched it more, just so my love is known around the world, that I watched it, I think, in 2 nights. And, you know, it was really funny because when it first came out on Netflix, I was like, whatever, because I'm so oversaturated with all the TV shows and everything. I can't even, I'm just going to watch the same movie 10 times rather than choose something new. But when I started, I was like, whatever. And then the whole first, you know, opening scene happens. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like, there's weird music playing. There's like animation happening. This is not going to happen. And then, you know, 2 minutes in, you're like, yes. Riveted. Shonda Rhimes doing what Shonda Rhimes did, at least for the first 3 seasons of Grey's Anatomy, because I couldn't watch after season 3. But I watched it probably in 2 days, and I think you texted me and you were like, are you watching this? I was like, already done, yes, completed. And then Eric was gone for like, I don't know, a week and a half, and then I watched it again in like 2 days. So I was back to back for episode, so viewing one and viewing two, and then I waited, I don't know, like a month, and then I watched it a third time. So it's been a lot, but I feel like you watched it more than that.
I have definitely watched it more than that. I think I've watched the whole series through 5 times, but I've like tried to rewatch it again, probably 7 times, and only gotten like 3 episodes in. And I get distracted, whatever, but it is so good. Like, and good. The nice thing too, is like, it's something that, I don't know, I feel like my husband isn't super, super into it, but he tolerates it. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's something that we have watched together. This is a really fun aside. And don't judge us, because this was like a one-time thing. But I think third time I watched it, and the first time I ever watched it was like my husband just kind of like around. Because the first time I watched it, to be clear, was over Christmas vacation, which was also my birthday. My birthday's on the 27th. And we were up at the cabin, and all of my kids, my husband, everyone's like doing family things. And I'm by myself upstairs in the bedroom with the door closed, watching it on my phone. And I can't stop watching. I'm like binging it. And people are like, Mom, it's time to eat. I'm like, leave me the hell alone.
I don't care. Feed yourselves.
I don't give a shit what's happening. Like, this is my birthday. Leave me alone. I'm trying to watch my damn show. Like a crazy old Mexican woman watching her.
Were you like huddled under the blankets with the phone, like with the flashlight? Yeah.
1000%. With headphones on, because I was like, dear God, don't hear what I'm
watching. Oh my God, did you like come out of it and you're like, I haven't had any water for 8 hours. I have not taken a shit for 8 hours.
Sweating my ass off. Like, it's cold and snowing up where we are in the cabin, and I'm sweating. I'm fully like taking off layers because I'm dying of heat stroke and drinking wine, like from, you know, the whole time I'm watching this thing.
As you do, yeah.
It literally was the funniest shit of my life. So then we watch it, we come home, and this was probably, this must have been in January, because again, don't judge us. People probably are gonna be like, you need to go to jail. It's fine. But my husband was gifted some hallucinogens, we'll say, for Christmas by my sister's ex-boyfriend, and was like, you know what? Like, it's, we were home. It was like a Friday night, not doing anything. He thought it was going to be a good idea to just like try those out, right? For the very first time ever, right? Goes and does that. He comes in as I'm watching it. He's like, what in the hell? So he like spent the whole first time he ever watched this episode, like probably pink elephants floating in and out of what was happening. Yes. But it was like sensory overload to him the first time. Like,
and doesn't he, but this is interesting though, because you've told me in the past, like when you're watching anything, you know, Jane Austen related, he's like, he calls them your period pieces, your periods.
Yeah. Like a period mix.
The fact that he, because Eric definitely has not watched, Eric only watches Jane Austen with me when he's in like the doghouse, like something's happened and he owes me a lot, right? And then he's like, the other day he was like, so do you want to watch, you know, Pride and Prejudice? I'm like, excuse me? Yes, I do. What was your grave, like fatal sin? But when I watched it for the first two times, he was on a flight, and some of the flight attendants were talking about it, and somebody was like, oh, is your wife watching this? And they're like, yeah, he's like, yeah, she's watched it twice already, maybe two and a half times. And they're like, it came out yesterday. Correct. It did. But you're lucky, because Eric's like, no, peace out. Like, I'm not, you know, unless again, like I owe you a debt of favor. He's not going to watch the period pieces with me at all. So the fact that Brayden did, whether, you know, sober or high, I mean, props to him for that.
Yeah. Well, and to be fair, he's not watching it for like the writing, you know, he's watching it because then we half watch it, if you know what I mean. So it's like totally fine. But yeah, I've watched it a whole hell of a lot of times. And I did the thing that you're not supposed to do, is I read the book after I watched the show.
I think like most people in the world, like I didn't realize it was based off of a series until you watch the first one. I mean, partly because you're just in awe of like the genius that is Shonda Rhimes and Chris Van Dusen or whatever his name is, you know, kind of thing. And all the hidden like gems and eggshells or eggs, whatever they call them.
Easter eggs.
Yeah. That are in there, and just like the genius of, you know, using orchestral music for Taylor Swift and Ariana Grande and all of your stuff, right? Like, yeah, no, I was beautiful. But then you're like, oh shit, these were books. Okay, pause, please. But I did the same thing. I read them afterwards too. And then, well, tell me how you felt about the series, because I have a few emotions about them.
Okay, so first off, I will start to tell you that when something like this comes out, I mean, this is anything. I like to immerse myself, clearly, if I watch it seven times, but I like to get really immersive. So I will read up on all the actors. I will download all the playlists to Spotify. I will listen to, like, I literally had a period, which I still do this, period of time where every morning when I got in the shower, I would put on the soundtrack every morning, ever, because it just like raised my vibes. I loved it. So sometimes too, if I'm in a bad mood, I'll just like put it on, take a bath, whatever. It's just, the music is so good. Yeah. So good. Not only the covers, because they had Vitamin String Quartet do all of those covers of current music, you know, in orchestra fashion. Freaking good. They have that playlist, but the actual soundtrack, the official soundtrack, is like just the, what do they call that? When you do like a Disney movie, it's not like the soundtrack, but it's like the score. The original score. Yeah. Like that is excellent as well.
Yeah,
like
it is. That's
what I listen to all the time. So definitely like would listen to it nonstop, immerse myself, you know, you watch the YouTube interviews of the cast, like you just I get really, really into it. And so when I did find out it was a book, I was honestly so resistant to reading it, because I was like, I don't want this to ruin it for me. I was afraid it was going to ruin it, because I don't know. I was very impressed, and it really was like Shonda Rhimes did just the most amazing job at taking something, because I feel like there were historical fiction elements to it. Like there really was a king of England that had a Princess Charlotte, and that king did go mad, and they, you know, like that is real. So they had these characters, but then they obviously had the twist of having them be people of color, and had a lot of like the women be in more control than like what would, you know, traditionally be true in Regency era. Is this Regency era? I think it is. Great Britain, England, whatever. So there was obviously a lot of things that were modernized, but in such a cool, fun way, you know? So I thought it was really fun even too that Princess Charlotte is a Black woman, but she has like a nephew that's German that comes in and that she wants to marry, you know, Daphne Bridgerton or whatever. So all of that was just so brilliant. There were so many great things about it. The actors, I think, did a phenomenal job. So one thing that I was worried about, obviously, is reading it and having it vanilla it for me. You know what I mean? Like having it just be more bland. And to be honest, it did a little bit. There was a little bit missing because in a book, I don't know, I think sometimes it depends, right? So I feel like the Outlander series, they had so much more breadth and ability to go deeper into the story and color more of the story and flesh out more. Because when you are, even if it's just a movie or even if it's just a like series that could be unlimited episodes, you're still limited, right? You can't have this like 3-hour episode every time to just talk about one setting or scene, where in a book you have unlimited space for that. So there was that, you know, piece where I was like, I don't know, these characters are so good. Are they going to be that colorful in the book? And definitely, yeah, some of them were, but some of them weren't. So I feel like, Lady Featherington in the show, I thought they spent a really good amount of time on her personality, you know, having people have empathy for that character, where I don't think they did as much of that on these like external smaller characters in the novel.
Yeah, she was more muted in the novel for sure. In the novels, yeah. I kind of had the same, I agree with everything actually. I had this sort of the same reaction. I was a little bit hesitant to read them. It took me, it actually, and nothing against Julia Quinn, but it took me probably until like book 4, which is Colin and Penelope, to really get into him. I struggled for the first couple of books for some reason. And I don't know if it was just, it took Julia Quinn a little bit to get going kind of thing. And now I've read a ton of historical, you know, fiction as well. And so, and I do like that they put those elements into the TV series, because like things about the tongue and all the, you know, the woman is ruined if she's seen, you know, with a man anywhere outside of like sort of the normal bounds of society. That is all very much represented across like all the historical novels I've ever read kind of thing. And that's usually how most women get ruined, right? They're in the garden kind of thing. But I struggled too. I really, I enjoyed the series. I did. And then I felt by the time she got to Eloise's story that she was really cooking with gas. Like I really enjoyed that. And we'll do this deep dive on characters too, but Eloise and I would say Hyacinth are probably my two favorite characters out of the entire series. I always, I don't know if it's just because I am female, identify as female, I always find myself more drawn to the female main character than the male. So even like with Anthony and Kate's story, I loved that, but I was like, Anthony, read. And then I was like, tell me what Kate's perspective is, you know, kind of thing. So I liked it. They were fun. They're fast reads, you know, they're kind of easy to get through. I did really enjoy, her sense of humor throughout all of them, right? That was very, very prevalent. And you see that in the series as well, like the TV series. But yeah, it took me a while to get going until about like Eloise. And I was like, okay, here we go. She's like, she's found the groove. She's found like what works, you know, kind of thing. And what's, and I don't know the backstory to this, and I'd be curious to know, like, I know I read a quick interview with Shonda Rhimes where she was like, you know, somebody had read this series, sent it to her. And she was like, it had everything we needed, which was, you know, the humor and the quintessential, like things you need for romance, and then the intrigue and sort of the setting. But as you and I know, there's 1,000,000,000 historical romance series out there. And I'm like, if I was Julia Quinn, I'd be like, holy shit, thank God it was mine, you know, that got chosen, because there's so many good writers, there's so many good historical fiction series. And it's like, Jesus, like be the one that Shonda Rhimes calls you and is like, hey, so this is Shonda. Like, we'd like to adapt this. What do you think? I would be like,
You've got the golden ticket. Yeah, you definitely got the Willy Wonka there for sure. But there is something to be said too of like timing, right? So if this was maybe 10 years ago, this may never have gotten adapted, because it's good. Like it's good and entertaining and awesome, but it's because it was made in this time where there are so many direct to consumer brands making their own shows, like Amazon, like Netflix, like Hulu, like every other channel, Peacock TV now, which is a subsidiary of NBC, right? There's a channel for everything.
Well, and like Acorn and like all the ones that are just British.
Exactly.
You know, shows. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Shudder, which does the Dark All Souls trilogy or whatever. There's so many channels now that are doing those original programming, that this is the golden age of TV, that if you can create a book that will give that, like, the baseline is it has to be a good story, right? Because even the most creative of producers need something to work with. But there's so much opportunity now, I feel like, if you are a writer, to find a screenwriter to adapt and then pitch to a million different channels or networks that would potentially take it on. So I think it is a bit of a lucky strike, but timing is huge for this. And obviously in culture, timing, it's perfect, especially with the characters that they did bring in and the way they cast it. It was like, this is just a perfect timing all around, I feel like.
No, I would agree. And that's not to diverge too much into that, but I feel like too, with like the entertainment industry, you don't see a lot of original movies right anymore coming out, kind of thing. And there has been this progression over the last, I don't know however many decades, 15, 20 years, where it's like that people, they're turning to books, or they've always turned to books, right? But I feel like even more so, Hunger Games, Divergent, like all these, you know, 50 Shades of Grey, these are all things that like these, and whether they were, you know, written now or previously, like the All Souls trilogy, Deb Harkness wrote those like a number of years ago. You know, this, it was like a 15-year process or something for her to get that produced into the TV series that it's being produced into. So I love that in a way, because I mean, you're still seeing some obviously you're seeing some original movies, but a lot of the times it is the book. It's they're taking the work of these authors and these writers and making those worlds even bigger, you know, kind of thing, which I love.
Which is really nice too, because it's, people can say what they want. People can have differing opinions of this, but really like a company like Netflix, there's no limits to what they can create, right? They could go through every single book that was ever written at some point and create something from it. And I find that to be, some people can look at it as a bad thing, but I can look at it as a good thing, right? Of like any book that's been written at any time now has the opportunity to be picked up, remixed, and turned into something. And why not? Like, yeah. I'm still freaking waiting for The Night Circus to be made into something, and I'm pissed that it hasn't been.
I know, we have a long list of books that we're like, could someone please, make them do a good job. Well, and what's it's the Leah Bardugo series, right? That just.
Oh yeah.
Right. Okay. I'm missing that one.
Why can't I think of it? But they did have the series come out, and it was good.
It was good. I felt like it was good. I feel like it's, you know, I got to wait till see what happens with like the next season. Yeah.
What I did not like, what we're totally
we'll reel back.
But I did not like that they took two different series all in the same universe. Like, it still is in the same universe, but there was a trilogy and then a duology that they mushed into one show.
Oh, I don't think I realized that, because I've only read the trilogy and I don't think I read the duology. So
the duology is actually my favorite. It's The Six of Crows is that, like,
That's right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they mixed like two different stories, because in her universe, it's like one's kind of set in like the Denmark or Netherlands of this fake world, and one's set in like Russia, almost Russia, and that, you know what I mean? So it's like kind of two different places. I don't know, it makes sense, right? Like they were figuring it out and they were putting these stories together, because it's almost like backtracking if you do it too separately. So if you do want to intertwine the stories, and it makes sense, but I was like, I kind of don't like that. So, which brings us to this, what I didn't love about the books specifically is that it gave us, which this is not her fault because the books came first, obviously, but she like kind of told us what we can expect to happen in future seasons. So we're not going to be surprised. So like, spoiler alert,
everybody ends up happily married.
Everyone ends up happily married. And like, even the first book, right? Because I know I've read the rest of them, but I read them a while ago now at this point. So they're all kind of mushed and jumbled in my head. But I didn't like, at the end of the first book, it gives us this like cut scene to the future of Penelope and Colin being married. I'm like, why didn't you just save that? Now I freaking know. And now there's no like guessing or tension. I mean, the story was good. Like, she had good writing, but I was like, shit, now we freaking knew already.
Yeah, no, I know. And like, don't give me the whole like family generational chart. Like, I don't want to see it until the very end. I don't want to see it.
Unveil it at the end. Like,
suspense. So,
Yeah, I was bummed about that. That was the piece that I was like, dang it. Like, did you just not plan on writing more? Or what was your thought process behind that? Exactly. Because I feel like you were already setting yourself up for a series because you were naming all of these freaking brothers and sisters. Like,
right. You knew you were going to do 8, like, because you've created that. I mean, maybe you thought it was just going to be 1 at the beginning, but like, as you started writing, you probably anticipated or were hoping that this was going to be an 8-book series.
Right.
Kind of thing. Yeah, no, I didn't love that. I didn't love the future scope that was happening, you know, at the end either. Because, and then some things you're just like, don't tell me, don't reveal that, you know, to me, right, kind of thing. And it's like, okay, yeah. But I mean, besides that, I mean, well written, funny, good, you know, I again, what always hits home for me is the humor and the family friendship connections. You know, one of my favorite parts of kind of the whole series is when they're playing whatever that game is out in the field, where they whack the balls, and like that comes in to a couple of different of the books, you know, at different times. So I like that she's weaving all these threads together that kind of really connect, you know, the pieces, essentially. But so tell me then, favorite book character, favorite TV series character.
That's good. So I actually, in the book, I did really like, I liked Anthony's story, oddly enough. Like, I'm kind of with you too. This is me on shows, right? Like, I guess books too. But if I can't, number one, identify or like with a character, or if I'm not attracted to a character, you lost me. Like, that's in any show. Like, and if there's no sexual tension whatsoever, I'm out. So like, you know me, I freaking love Chris Hemsworth, but he just did a movie and there was like no romance in it at all. I'm like, I'm out. Like,
his whole like blow him up, shoot him up, capture the kidnapped kid one.
Every single movie is that, but yes, that one where it's like, I mean, I'm watching it for him, but I'm like, there's nothing. What does this have to do with me?
That was my number one complaint about that movie, because it was bloody and violent the entire time. And I'm like, could you at least throw a kiss in there somewhere
for
me?
Yeah, nothing. So yeah, you lose me in that. So same thing, like I liked his character because in a weird way, as the oldest, I could kind of identify, right? Like even Daphne, she is the oldest daughter, but she's not the oldest of a family. So for me, being an oldest child, I was like, I really like him. Like, I like how she wrote him in that. In the show, I do like him, but like I told you, he seemed short. So I'm like, but my favorite,
I'm judging you, by the way, in case you ever hear this podcast, we do apologize. You're very handsome, but we need you a little taller.
It's like, I freaking love Tom Hardy, love him, but he's short. He's too short. So like, that is super judgmental. And I know that that is providing a double standard, because when men judge women by any of the part of their appearance, and it's a no-no, but I do judgment. Like, I have a very specific height ratio requirement. It has to be 6 inches above how I am. Because if I'm wearing heels, I still need to be taller, but you can't be freakishly tall. So like 6 foot, that's all I got. That's all you have to be. Is six.
Most women I know feel like this, except unless they're very, very short themselves, then they're like, it's fine, you know, kind of thing.
No, I feel like there's so many women that like dig super tall guys, and that's just not me. Like, even reading all of these books, like from last week by Rebecca Zanetti, all of her characters are like 6'4". I'm like, can't. It would make me feel like The Rock and Emily Blunt, where I feel like his child. Like, I don't need that.
I'm going to just go ahead and fit in your pocket and take me wherever you need to. Yeah. My question though, is characters and in real life, when you have someone who's very, very tall and someone who's very, very short, I'm like, sexually, how does that work? Like, hearts have to line up. So
you want to hear the funniest thing about that is I feel like there was this meme floating around a while ago that was like Shaquille O'Neal and his wife or his girlfriend. And it was literally like, they did like a side-by-side picture of like, it's like tiny gerbil eating a giant banana. And I was like, exactly. Like, I can't. Like,
yeah, it's wrong. It's wrong. We shouldn't even go there.
Any of that. Like, the worst. So, yes, in the show, he's too short for me. So, in the show, I think my favorite just character in general is, I can't think of her name. Lady Danbury?
Yes.
Yeah. So, what's his name? Simon's, like, surrogate mother.
Great aunt. Yeah. Yeah.
Obsessed with her. She's my favorite character of the whole thing. Every time she came on screen, I died, because that is goals. Like, that is who I want to be in real life, is like 100%. Just this rich, grouchy old lady who just people don't even try to cross. And you just embarrass people left and right on purpose. Like, that's my jam. Like, that's the kind of grandmother I want to be, is just like this. Cause I have a grandmother like that, just salty, like just a salty lady. Love it. It's like my favorite thing. She was my favorite.
here. I think she translated well, actually, from the books to the screen, too, because I feel like in the books, her character is exactly that, too, where she's just, she's salty, and she's, like, take no prisoners, and she likes to, like, mess with you, right? Like, she wants to, like, kind of fuck with you a little bit, and, like, she has fun in that, which is great.
Which makes sense, too, because, like, again, not that we know, not that we can really know what it was like back then, right? You can read all the Jane Austen novels, you can, but, like, as a woman that lives in 2021, that life seems so boring. Oh. Like, the most boring, like, the idea, the fact that, like, your fun is to go to someone's house and, like, in Pride and Prejudice, like, walk around a room, arm in arm with another woman, like, that, fuck that. None of that sounds fun.
Like, yes, well, and in some of the books I'm reading in the same era, it's, like, social calls, like, approved social calls were no longer than 15 minutes.
Hate that. Like, hate,
so, like, here's your crumpet and your one glass of tea or cup of tea, and then out you go kind of thing. No, I would rather actually feel like I'd prefer to be a peasant, because at least then I'm, like, doing something.
You're working.
I'm working. I probably will marry a nice peasant boy, but, like, your life's mission, your life's goal is to marry well, and so you can just go, like, embroider your days away. You're like, fucking, hey, man, like, can I do something? Oh, no, yeah, the whole, like, walking around, let's take a turn around the room. You're like, no, can I go reverse?
That sounds awful. So, like, to me, it'd be, like, your life would be so boring as a woman of privilege there that, like, you kind of do have to fuck with people to have any sort of entertainment at all, because your options are limited.
They're so limited. Yeah, no, I agree. I'd be bored as all get out, for sure.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That totally makes sense to me, she's your favorite.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Love that.
Absolutely. Hey, you, your favorite. Okay.
So for me, I actually cross, they're both the same. So I really do think my favorite character.
I'm going to guess. Wait, I got to guess. It's Eloise.
It is Eloise. Yes. Oh my God. I love it. Okay. So first of all, let's say this. So in the book, she's fantastic. And I like Eloise and I like Hyacinth mostly because they're so just, like, they kind of do flip the bird, right? And they're so outside of what's considered the traditional proper, like, feminine role, right? In this era. And they're both, I just have a little bit of attitude to them. So I loved them in the books, but Eloise, whoever, I forget her name, who plays her in the series, watch the series again, specifically hyper-focus on Eloise's facial, like, markers. I feel that actress I actually think she's the best of the series, to be totally honest with you, because of how she controls her facial expressions, her moods, I had to watch her again. The second time I watched, I was like, oh my God, she is so good. She's so good.
She's so funny. She's like the funniest character.
She is. And when you catch, like, the expression she makes, like, you know, when they're sitting on the couch and both her brothers are eating the candy, like, just her facial expressions back and forth, I'm like, God, you are genius right now. Genius. So I love her as the actor, but I also just love that character because it is the same thing. She's like, you know, she's trying to make her own way in the world. And she's so upfront, especially with Benedict, her brother, you know, those conversations on the swings that she has when she's like, you can do whatever you want. Why the F aren't you doing it? She's like, I have to sit here and scribble away and, like, kind of make my way quietly, you know, kind of thing. So I like the push against societal norms from her in both the book and the film. And I liked the book too, because she was like, so I'm off and running and to marry someone I've never met. And, you know, hopefully it works out, fingers crossed. And then she takes, you know, his two, like, you know, kids under wing and kind of has to, like, corral them essentially. But I liked him, and I like her devotion to Penelope. I like that connection to Penelope, and especially, like, when Benedict and his wife Sophie, you know, kind of are ostracized because of her background, and, you know, they go live in the country. Like, there's still, so there's actually that side plot too, right, of what's happening in London, but then what's happening in the country with all those people who, like, kind of like, I don't want to do the whole scene, the market, you know, every year kind of thing. So yeah, that was a cross one for me. I liked both.
She is good. I really do love that actress. She is good. I do, which again, this is probably like a sign of the time, but when you hear the same, like, rallying cry for women, for me, so like for her character, she is so funny, but in the show, like, let's not complain anymore. Let's, like, do something about it. But there really is only so much that you can do in that
situation. Right. And it's not her story yet, right? So exactly. like there's all these, and I know that Netflix has renewed through season 4, which is, she's just shy. I'm like, come on, you can renew.
Make it to season 5.
I want to see her season so badly, you know, kind of thing. But yeah, no, I agree. But I think it'll get there. I think think it'll get
But I love that dynamic, actually. Like, it really worked because you can see everyone in her family's, like, exasperation. They're like, can we, like, give it a damn rest? Like, I love her interplay with, like, Daphne. One of my favorite scenes of the show is when Daphne's playing the piano and she's reading and she gets really exasperated. And even Brayden was, like, dying laughing at this part of their, like, interaction because it felt so authentic as sisters, right? Is like, dear God, please shut the fuck up. Like, we are done hearing this. And then the interaction with, like, you know, Daphne saying, like, you don't understand me. Like, I'm trying to do this thing so all of us are okay. And you can't imagine the pressure of this. And then her perspective of, like, you don't understand me. This is my, so it really is, the whole story is about people feeling misunderstood. And that's just human nature, right? Yeah. Like, you can really boil every single argument with anyone down to, like, you don't see me. And then I can't relate to you. And right, so right. They did a really good job of, like, doing that in a way that felt real and authentic between siblings.
No, I do too. And there's two other scenes that they did that too. And that's the one where Daphne's getting ready for one of the balls. And then Eloise comes in and she sits down and she's like, you know, how do you do it? And she's like, what? She's like, just the exhaustion of, like, playing pretend all the time, you know? So there's this misfire there. And then the final scene when they're there, like not the final scene, but when they're in the ball at their house, you know, in the rain, that big scene at the end kind of thing. And Eloise comes down the stairs and she's dressed up and then they have this conversation and she's like, Eloise says to Daphne, she's like, you know, thank you for being perfect because I don't have to be. And then there's like that understanding that happens right then with the mom, like Violet's looking on kind of thing. And you're like, okay, so we kind of have a foundational footing for everybody now, but it's taken us, you know, 8 episodes to get here basically. Yeah.
Right. And I, to be honest too, I did really love the mother character as well. Because she, same thing, right? She's dealt these cards, right? This is the life she's been born into. She's been married into, and now she has to navigate it without a husband. Like, I found her character really fascinating as well, like, and fun. But all in all, it's just like a fun read, right? Like, this book series, you can get through them quick. Like, they're fast flips. You can burn through them all. And there is, like, a bunch to go through. And you do get invested with these characters because they do start to feel like family. So I feel like Julia Quinn did do a really good job about making you feel like you are immersed in an actual family because there is those dynamics of love and conflict in a good way.
Yes, agreed. 100%. It's a good read for anybody who hasn't read them. Like read them. Unless you don't want the spoil. Unless you don't want to know, like, who's Lady Whistledown, you know, who's penning Lady Whistledown and all that, like, then you've got to wait and just wait 5 years to figure that out.
Yeah. Well, and don't, let's not forget the most important thing is that the narrator of the show is Julie Andrews herself.
Could we dame? Is she a dame? I'm just going to make her a dame.
She needs to be because she is literally like among giants. The fact that they could get her to narrate the series and have her voice be the voice of Lady Whistledown.
Yes.
Huge. Yeah. So good.
Oh my God. Yep.
Okay, so that being said, 10 out of 10, loved the series, loved the books. Would you recommend they read the books first? What do you think?
You know, that's a hard one for me. I do because I'm kind of a firm believer in it anyway. Like, I'm always someone who's going to say, you know, read Harry Potter first before you see the movies, because I want people to build that world inside their brain first, because that's who I always stay attached to. So no matter what I see later, I still have like that attachment to what I've already created in my brain, you know, kind of thing.
Okay, before you go on with that, let me ask you this. Once you have people cast and you reread the books, do you now see the cast in your mind every time you read them?
No, actually.
You don't? Mm-hmm. Okay, I do though. That sucks. I wish I didn't, but I absolutely do. So even Discovery of Witches, when that came out and I'm rereading the books, we'll talk about that in a segue, yeah. I see those people in my mind and I'm kind of bummed.
Yeah, no, I don't know why, but I've managed to do a pretty good job where, like, I can keep that same image of, like, Hermione from Harry Potter in my head. I have a Hermione that I had when I was 16 years old before it became Emma Watson, right? So,
got it.
Like, I've managed to do that, but it's hard. It's hard to do that. So, I'm a big fan of read it first, then watch it. I also know people's time is very limited and we're tired. So people are like, fuck that. I'm going to just binge watch, you know, especially episode 3 and 4 when the sex gets good and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But like, right. But I don't know. How about you? Would you watch or read first?
I think you're right. It depends on if you want there to be spoiler alerts. So like, if you're good with like knowing a lot of the things, then go ahead and read it. But if you want to be surprised, then do the show.
do you ever feel like, okay, so you watched When Harry Met Sally, right? And so Billy Crystal's character.
I actually have not ever seen
that. Oh my God. Okay. Please put that. It's so good in so many ways, in so many nuanced ways, but there's a scene in that movie when, you know, it's Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan. And Billy Crystal, he's this kind of like neurotic all over the place guy, right? But there's a scene where he's like telling her how he reads a book. And he's like, well, I read the end first.
Oh, I do that.
Right. So if you're that type of person, you might want to watch the series and then.
Right. I always, when I get a new book, I read the last page first.
Oh my God.
Every book.
No, incorrect.
I do that.
I can't. So my thing is, I get that because my problem is when I get really invested in the book and I read really fast, but then I'll read like triple time to get to the end. Right. And I want to see what happens. And then I almost, and Eric's like, did you even actually like read it? And I'm like, yeah, no, I did, but I'm sure I missed some things. So I have to go back because I have such anxiety about like what's happening at the end.
Yeah, all the Dan Brown books, I had to read three times to really read it. Cause I did the same. I'm like, who is the murderer? What's happening? Do they live? Like,
this is why we're not doing a podcast on murder mystery novels, because we would suck at it. We'd be like, well, it was this guy. I wouldn't even read the book.
I don't know what happened in the book. I can't tell you the plot, but I can tell you who did it. That's what I can tell you.
Oh my God. It would be the worst. No, we'll stick with this.
We'll stick with this, where the details matter, you know, like the slow burn sex scenes matter.
Yeah.
So, oh my God, that being said, we didn't even talk about the sex really quick.
Right.
So I feel like the show is one of the best shows for the sex. The books, on the other hand, I feel like they could be a little bit more descriptive. That's what I would say.
Yep. I would agree with that. And I know, as we all know, they've talked about it extensively in interviews for the TV show. They actually had like a sex choreographer who like came in and the interview and the, you know, the actors were saying it was very much like a, you know, a choreographed,
like dance rehearsal. Yeah.
A dance rehearsal. So like that made it, and I don't fucking care if that's true or not, because
but
it was
naked.
On fire.
It was chef's kiss. It was so, they did a really, really good job.
They did an amazing, amazing job. And you have to love when, you know, Reggae, the actor who played Simon, was saying, you know, his family would text him and be like, oh my God, I had to go put on a pot of tea to walk away while you were doing this. And then I came back and you were still having sex with her. He said that in a couple of interviews where he's on like a group family text and they're like, you got to wait like 10 minutes from cue here to cue here to like come back in. So he wouldn't see his naked butt everywhere.
I could never do that. Like literally the thought of like my father-in-law possibly watching a scene that I was in, even remotely like topless, would kill me dead. Like I was not built for that. Absolutely.
Well, I feel like that too, because I'm like thinking about like even just like, and you must go into a zone as an actor, or you must have some sort of, I don't know, training or whatever, but just to even like make out with someone else weirds me out, because I'm like, but I'm married, and like it's only
if you're married, it's weird, and you're like, please never watch this, you know, which that is a whole other aside. Can we talk about, do you love Jessica Chastain? Because I love her.
Oh, I love her. I think she's great. Okay. Yeah, fantastic.
So she has a new show coming out, Scenes from a Marriage, with the guy, Oscar something.
Isaac. Isaac. Yes.
Whatever his name is. Which also another segue tangent. What nationality is he? Who knows? He's literally like the most ambiguously nationalized person. Like, is he Greek? Is he Spanish? Is he Mexican? Is he Italian? Who knows?
He's very good looking. Let's just leave it at that.
He could be any of those things, or a mix of all of them. Who knows? But he's played like a character of all of those nationalities. So you're like, at this point, who fucking knows? Right. So they're in a movie together. Literally all over my Instagram last week, every time I would open it in the news feed would be like, thank you, the arm kiss, the armpit sniff kiss thing.
Did you watch it? It's fucking fire.
I watched it and I saved it and I sent it to everyone I know. Of course, because I was like, I'm sweating watching this. And then there were so many people commenting and giving shade because they were like, they're both married to different people. Everyone calm down. And I'm like, who fucking cares, first of all? Second of all, they're selling a show. So let them do
it. Their kids have fucking playdates, people. They're fine. They've been friends for like 20 years. This is called propaganda.
Exactly. And I'm here for it. Like, I'm totally here for it. But like, even that, right? Like, I'm not married to a person that would like be cool with that. I'm just not. You know, so
I mean, Eric would be cool with it if he's like, babe, if you go to do this and they're gonna give us $3 million, like, knock yourself out. Like,
I think that's right. We need to have perspective on it, because now
arm kiss.
I was never gonna watch that show, but now I'm watching it.
Dude, I'm that chemistry, now. The chemistry is off the fucking hook. Like, I was, yeah, just from your runway, red carpet, arm trail kiss down the whatever, I was like, damn.
So I'm in. I'll watch whatever you're throwing at me because yes, I'm in. So yeah, for sure. It would be awkward. I could never do it, not built for it. So it's fine. But yeah, it's very impressive to see people that can like take writing and then turn it into these scenes. And it's like perfectly placed, right? Because not obviously not every sex scene that we saw in this show was in the book, right? Like they had to strategically place these things and put them in. And so yeah, I would say the books could have used more.
Yep.
I would have taken more sex scenes and more vividly written descriptive ones.
Yes. As well. Yes. Question for you. And this is me being a very vulnerable moment here. Do you, and be honest, when there is a good sex scene in a film, do you watch, rewind and watch again? Because
yes. Are
that scene in the garden where he grabs her for the first time? I'm like, yes, rewind, play. Because you're like, you've been waiting for it for, you know, three episodes now. And I'm like, is this normal?
Yeah, 1000%. We have a very unique way though, because not a unique way, but like our situation's so different. You live by yourself pretty much and your husband, right? You don't have kids. You don't have a bunch of things happening. We have six children in a house and we always watch TV in our room. Our room's at the end of the hall, and we always have we have these two doors that open up, so you can close them, right? But for the most part, our doors are open, wide open, and then we have this giant TV that does not belong in a bedroom. It belongs on a normal living room TV, but it's huge and massive, and it's on our dresser. So anyone that walks by the hallway, whether they're going to the bathroom, whatever, you will see what we're seeing, right? So we have this routine where when we're watching something steamy, the minute a sex scene comes on, someone has to get up and close the doors. We have to turn the volume all the way down, which is really unfortunate because you want to like be immersed in it. It's like an immersive experience if you're
You like pause beforehand. That does not help the flow of the situation.
So that's why I watched it on my phone with headphones by myself 27 times, because the way we watch steamy scenes is like numbs it a bit, because there's a million kids in our house and kids that are not just babies, kids that are like 14, you know, and like are probably FaceTiming a friend or on a, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's weird. Or they have friends over, like, it's just a whole dynamic that's awkward. So yeah, our experience isn't as good as yours, I bet.
Totally fine. I get it. But next time, maybe it's like you turn the TV just a little bit and you guys do the like earbuds or whatever that like give you the Bluetooth over, and then you can just flow freely. Yeah. Even if a child bleeding out on the floor, you're still immersed completely.
I'm in. Yeah. Yeah. I wish ours was like that. Like I want to see it full stereo, surround sound.
Yes.
VR almost. Like I know I want the whole experience for sure. So that being said, what are we reading now? So that's our synopsis of Bridgerton. Now moving on from Bridgerton, what are you reading right now and are you loving it?
Yes, I literally have to look it back. I have to look it up again on my, oh yes, that's right. I did read that. Okay. So I'm in two things right now. I just finished, it's called The Virgin Who Ruined Lord Grey by Anna Bradley. It is part of a series and I, same thing. It's Victorian era, all that sort of stuff. It's great. I love this because it's a little bit of a different twist where the main female protagonist, she is basically an orphan. She got raised, she was raised by a kind of a Lady Danbury, if you will, in this school for girls, but the school for girls is like five or six girls in this house in, I think they're in London kind of thing. But this woman actually, she raises them in such a way where like, they're actually sent out on like assignments to like do good. So this, yeah, so it's got the main protagonist, all of that, but it's really, about her story, and she does things that women don't do in this time. So she's trying to actually hunt down this person who has accused a good friend of hers of murder. And so she's like climbing rooftops and she's scaling buildings and she's doing all that sort of stuff. So they're kind of like her, you know, surrogate mother in the series, sends her pupils, if you will, out on different various assignments. And then there's all the romance and love and intrigue, but there's more mystery to it, which I really enjoy.
Fascinating.
Really good. And then I'm just about to finish in the non-romance area. So I'm part of a virtual spiritual book club.
Oh.
So we've been meeting for a while and we started with Dispenza a couple of months ago and I love him, but he's heavy.
Which one are you reading?
Oh, which one did I read? We finished it already. It is, couldn't tell you. I think Eric's reading it now. Oh shoot. It's, you know, changing your brain, something like that. Blah, blah, blah.
Did you love it?
I loved it, but it's heavy. I mean, he goes into the science of it, and he really walks you through all that. So like, it was good. We finished that, but now we're just about to finish the next book, and it's called Soundtracks by John Acuff, who I love him because he's funny as all get out. And he gives you, it's about, how we all play soundtracks in our brain. Like, you know, those thoughts we believe about ourselves, the thoughts that we believe about the world, all that sort of stuff. And he's like, you have permanently ingrained soundtracks, and he teaches you how to either, you know, retire them and then replace them, basically. It's all about the same thing about like how your thoughts can create your reality, how you can change your perspective about certain things. But he's funny, and he does it in really easy, like digestible ways to like that you can actually like keep on track with. So we're just finishing that one tomorrow, actually. So I've been very much enjoying that because it was a nice break from, well, I love Joe Dispenza, but he's very, it's a lot to chew on.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
I love him. So I'm rereading two books at the moment. And the first one, it was actually really funny because it's aligned with yours, the second one. But the first one I'm reading is, why can't I think of the name? Hello. Discovery of Witches.
Yes.
So right. We're creeping into fall. Autumn equinox is next Wednesday, which is also Clementine's birthday, my littlest daughter. There's so many books I like to read for Halloween that I have to give it a head start because I like just.
You're like, I start in July, but it's fine.
I watched my first Halloween spooky show, which is on HBO Max. It's called Lovecraft Country. Highly recommend, really love. If you like any kind of sci-fi at all, it's really, really good. And there's a whole backstory. I could do a whole other thing on that. But it was really, really good. And there was really good sex scenes in it as well. Very fascinating, but it is kind of creepy horror. So if you are not into blood and guts, don't watch it. But if you like the combo of like really good sci-fi that's weird, but not too out there, and some blood and guts, but also has some romantic twists. And it was really good because it had a twist about also historical fiction, but a lot of good, I don't even know what you call this, like African-American people of color history. So like it's set in the 50s. So there's a lot of like civil rights movement nods to that and kind of pieces and stuff. And they had like flashbacks to like the Tulsa massacres. Like it was fascinating. Like the series was really good and everyone in it, excellent. Like the music was excellent. So again, another immersive thing. So my first kind of big spooky, creepy show, I just finished my series. And then for books, I'm reading Discovery of Witches. And so I've read the trilogy before, I'm rereading it. There is a show are we gonna talk about that? I think we have it on our list. We can talk about that, but I'm rereading that series so we can talk about it on the podcast, but I just love it. It's just really good.
So good, it's so good.
Yeah, and same thing. I feel like it's not as realistic as Rebecca Zanetti writes her characters that are like not human, you know, but it's still pretty close to where you're like, I could see this. Like I could see people being hit, you know, like
close enough. Yeah.
Close enough. So it's really good. So I'm reading that. And then my other one I'm reading right now is another like spiritual book. And it is Law of Attraction by Abraham Hicks. Like read it before, love it. But it's something that I think I read either, you know, I'm going to be reading almost twice a year, I would think, because it's just nice to kind of keep it fresh. And especially because that one has really good day-to-day practices in it that to keep your vibration high and keep your energy up and just keep focused on the things that you want to make happen in your life. Because this is a kind of weird time in culture right now where it's really easy to get distracted with things that bring it down. So anytime I kind of catch myself like, oh shit, I'm getting caught in this narrative, I need to like take a step back and say like, is this healthy for me to be spending all this attention on, or do I need to focus and step back and put my attention elsewhere? So.
Oh, I love it. I love Abraham Hicks too. Oh my goodness. That's great.
So good.
Perfect. So good.
That is our Bridgerton episode. I feel like it went on a million tangents, but it was really cool. So
it's fine. The end of it is we love Shonda Rhimes. Keep creating beautiful things. Julia Quinn, thank you for your original inspiration for all of this. I love it. Love it. Love it.
Yeah. So good. So we'll put links to all these things that we talked about in the show notes if you guys want to read them. And then let us know, did you love the series? Did you love the book series? What did you think about both of them? Let us know in your review. We'd love to hear it.
Yes. And then get ready for next week when we are going on to one of potentially the most prolific romance novelists out there. I think she's still with us and living because she's still producing books.
She is.
Book after book after book. And that is the ever, you know, luminescent Nora Roberts. So
we'll be talking. I'm excited. because we're going to talk about her writing process too, because I've done a deep dive on it and it's fascinating. Oh,
of course you have. Yes. And she's a great one because there's so many different, she's doing trilogies and full series and standalone books and the whole gamut. So pretty pumped about that one.
For sure. Yay. Okay. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye guys.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Bodice Rippers Romance Novel Podcast. We are just so completely delighted that you guys are tuning in and listening to all things romance novel related, as well as all things in a completely different tangent. We're here for big conversations, small conversations that are on topic and off topic. Please, 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 if you have a second, just rate, review, subscribe, leave us a note, leave us a message. It just really helps us in the podcasting world, as we pretty much want to be doing this full time because we just love chatting about all things romance novels and talking with all of you guys. So if you have a quick second, let us know how we're doing. And of course, if you have any feedback, just pop us a review and let us know what we could do better, could do worse, or could do more in a hilarious fashion. And until next time, you guys, get out there, read those romance novels, and let us know what are your juiciest takeaways. Talk to you soon.